I was looking online, and one of the things I saw was a picture from Euronews.
Okay.
And it's a picture of all of these very similar looking white men in military uniform holding their AKs, and they're standing in line, and it's very intimidating. And it's, of course, your Russian military. And the headline is, Russia likely suffered at least 355,000 casualties in Ukraine war. And the reason I brought that up is that I started doing some research on what the media, journalistic enterprises, are saying about the casualties, okay? Because of the recent push by the Russians and the acquisition of some land at a very high cost. But it was interesting is that I saw overwhelmingly everyone using the same Northern European white guy, fierce, you know, like when the Chinese all line everybody up in these massive things, as opposed to the ones that are from Africa or from Serbia, the steppe looking people, the
Siberia.
What'd I say?
Serbia.
Well, you know, that goes to old age, I guess. So yeah, Siberia and the steppes and all the cockamamie, we'll call them Martians, that we've seen. And I'm not being mean.
I think they have like they've recruited like 20,000 Nepalese, and you know, they have a huge recruitment pool of people that are coming from these various African countries that they've used Wagner to go in and help the governments and do various things. There's a, you know, obviously, like you said, there's actually some good articles by mainstream outlets about they've done investigative reports on these, you know, Russia emptying the steppes basically of fighting age males, and how they're using those more than anything because they're trying to preserve their Western populace to some degree. I mean, a lot of it also has to do with, you know, the people that are in these Western areas of Russia are much more economically productive. So it's, you know, it's not just a, some of these articles paint it as a race thing, which I'm sure it is to some degree, but it's also an economic thing. You know, these are the people who are running more productive enterprises and versus the potato farmers out in Siberia. So like, they're going to take who they obviously are going to take.
Well, the reason I brought that up is simply based upon one simple thing. I've been waiting for somebody in the extreme liberal bent of this to go after Russia for recruiting non-white Northern European conscripts. And even when they're getting people who are going voluntarily because they're getting paid, and you know, it's like anything else, mercenaries.
Oh yeah, yeah, you have a lot of that. And most of those, let's call them non-foreigners for a Russian perspective, are paid. They're mercenaries. They're there for, I want to say the Nepalese, they're paying them like $2,000 a month to be there. And something I saw about that, they compared to whatever they can make domestically on average, it's you know, 3, 4, 5 times what they can make locally. So
I was just thinking about this, is that why hasn't a Greenwich Village, New York, East Side hard liberal reporter organization, and I watch these things, I'm not an expert on it, but I look at them, haven't they come out and started painting them as abusing minorities? Although
there's been some of that. I've seen a little bit, but there's not, you know, it only goes so far. I mean, this is something that's interesting. It's a phenomenon you'll see across the United States, how Biden didn't have to run for a primary, right?
Yeah.
So he was the presumptive nominee the whole time. Trump did have to run a very easy primary. But the point is the where Biden has been sitting politically, so where the Democrat Party's standard bearer has been sitting politically and where they're trending. And it's much more tolerable to normal people. It's very populist by comparison to prior Democrat presidents. And that same type of vibe is reverberating in the post kind of Trump era across media as well. So it's interesting because they're not harping on some certain things as much as they used to, because people aren't interested. So while there actually is a legitimate case there to be made for them, I don't know, abusing, taking advantage of, whatever, you know, however you want to frame it, these people who are their ethnic minorities or whatever, it is very interesting because there's only been a little bit of play on that because there's just not as much interest. I mean, that's just my perspective on it because I've noticed that too.
Well, and then the other thing is, what happens to, let's use Nepal as a good example. This is not a military powerhouse in any way, shape, or form. And those who are able to go to Russia, fight for the Russians, have got to be a little smarter and more savvy. I'm just using the word savvy, than the typical person in Nepal when faced with a combative situation.
Sure.
I use the word combative. So you drain your populace of those who are going to stand up and kick butt and take names when it hits the fan.
No, that's true.
So what, you know, now you just kind of relate that to a lot of different economic areas. For example, China. And that just opens even more doors for Chinese influence, and when they got to get a little thuggery.
Yeah, sure. Well, Nepal is not an unexpected area of soldier acquisition. Economics and all of that is one thing. But remember, I think unless I'm mixing up the countries, I'm pretty sure Nepal is right. The British pulled soldiers from there for a mm-hmm. long time. They had I think they called them the Gurkhas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a mythology behind the infamous steppe warriors that the British military had as, you know, separate units. So, you know, it's not unexpected, I don't think.
Yeah, Nepal is one thing. I mean, I would make the argument those people know how to fight.
Some of them do, yeah, for sure. But it's also just weird because it's a country that's landlocked in the middle of nowhere, and they keep popping up in these conflicts.
Well, the if you go to the other side of the world, from Ocala, you go to Kathmandu. Literally, if you draw an arrow through the earth, and you're basically at Kathmandu. I've always told people that. I just love doing that for some reason. Cat Stevens, his name is now Mahajiraja Dajadu. I don't know what it is, but Cat Stevens, the old 60s psychedelic singer, whatever, he went to Kathmandu and got God or whatever he got over there. But, you know, here's the thing. Nepal is a good example, but the thing that I'm concerned about, not concerned in the sense that I'm got any vested interest, I just don't worry about it, but I guess what I'm interested in, the Russians have pulled some interesting people out of Africa. And this is not a negative on Africa in any way, shape, or form, but they're not known anywhere for having an elite fighting force. I don't care what country you have, there's not these elite. So when you take all of these trained military people that they do have, and a lot of their police force, and then, you know, some guy who can't barely get anything done computer-wise, but he's very savvy, so, well, he's smart. So he goes in the military, he goes to Russia, and he dies. You're really draining the brain pool.
Yes, but I would say that there's a game that Russia is playing with Africa, and this is something that is not discussed about.
Let's talk about that. Because I think it's, what you have to say is really insightful.
Yeah, well, Russia is playing, their short-term game is terrible. Their long-term game is disturbing. And this is very reminiscent of the Soviet Union. Short-term, they always look incredibly dumb. Their long-term plans, if they actually seem to come to fruition, are scary. And so what they're doing with Africa, if you have paid any attention, I mean, there's been a few articles about things in the mainstream, meaning mainstream in English and in the United States, but in Europe they talk about it a lot. Where are they using, so Wagner and their coup and all of this stuff, and in I think most people's mind, Wagner doesn't exist anymore, but that's not true. it exists. They killed Prigozhin and his right-hand person, and I think their head of staff and all of these people. And Prigozhin's son is now running Wagner.
That's like saying Blackwater was disbanded and no longer exists.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But it's
just morphs into a different organization, similar people, the mission still is there. It's always going to be that way.
Yeah, exactly. But in this case, the name is the same, and it would be like, you know, what do you call it? Mid-2000s era Eric Prince, who owned Blackwater at the time. The United States government has enough of his stuff, and they decide to kill him. And then his son now is in charge of Blackwater, and it still exists.
Yeah.
Right. That's the bigger analogy there, and it's very strange. But anyway, well, the reason it's still a thing is it's not really the what they did in Ukraine and everything was a total distraction from their general plan, and their general plan is they are an effective let's call it plausible deniability force that operates like a private company with insane military resources and willingness to do things. And they're all over Africa. They have stood up, I think, over the past year, maybe 4 coups, I think, of serious countries. Countries that we have military bases in. And they've been systematically going through Africa. And I assume they work with the Chinese purely because the Chinese have huge interests in Africa as well. And they have been systematically dismantling the government and intelligence infrastructure that we have built to help stabilize Africa. Because one of the things people don't realize is in 2014 in Ukraine, you had the Maidan revolution, went after the corrupt government, basically. Contrary to the conspiracy, the United States, the reason we didn't get more involved in things is because we didn't know how to handle the situation because a lot of the players were new. It was unstable, and we didn't know. We figured the Russians would get it under control, and then they would just become, they'd be subjugated to Russia. So we didn't, I don't think we wanted to get sucked into something that would be
costly. Forecasting based upon odds calculation, it just wasn't a good, we didn't have a good play.
No. So that's why when you go back to that time period and you look at the videos of people like Victoria Nuland, who is once again in the government, and you know, they went to Kyiv, they tried to make negotiations with the, was it Poroshenko government and all these various things, and they went nowhere. Because, you know, the people were still mad and the government was still crappy, and, you know, that is what it is. But what happened after that, so, you know, Russia, they're totally not Russian soldiers, but they're wearing Russian uniforms just with the flags taken off. Anyway, they invaded Ukraine. I'm not joking, though. Remember, at this point in time, the United States says, the Russians are invading Ukraine, taking advantage of political instability. And the Russians' response is, that's not us. Those are just rogue elements of our military that were on vacation over there, driving tanks, flying helicopters, flying planes. They just wearing, they called them the little green men.
Yep.
Wearing the Russian uniforms with the flags either taken off or taped over. It's just the dumbest thing ever. Anyway, they took over Crimea. You know, so they took that over and whatever.
And you know what amazing, having lived through that, the lack of outrage.
In hindsight, the fact that anybody took that seriously is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I think about that all the time. Because it is just
It is literally
stupid.
One of those WTF.
Yeah.
What the Sam devil?
I mean, can you imagine us invading Canada with the military and then saying, oh, well, that's just like random militias, and these guys were there on vacation and we basically don't have any control over them, as they're like driving through the place with like Abrams tanks, like blowing shit up. Like, it makes no sense at all. and then the whole world, the best part is the whole world goes, oh, okay, that makes sense. It's like, what?
Yeah, so, you know, it like, for example, this is just lots of little segues. By the way, we're recording in the cottage today. We're not in the office, so The quality of our microphones would be a little bit different. We were tied up yesterday. Normally, we put these things up on Monday, so we apologize. At least I apologize. I was traveling. But what I was going to say is, you know, years ago, you know, you were using the word meme, and I kept saying, "What's a?" I know what a meme is. Why is everybody meme, meme, meme? Everything's a meme. But see, I get it now. I don't want to sound like an old fart, stupid man, but dumbing it. You know, I've always took a lot of pride in breaking incredibly complicated things down into simple. I've always understood the Einstein phrase. You know. Make everything as simple as possible without making it simpler. I really totally understand that. But my God, sometimes you have to, you know, this is a foot. This is a shoe. No, foot, shoe. Oh, foot. Got it. I'm sorry. Sometimes you just want to scream. And then you see world leaders and you look in their eyes, you can tell they don't know what the hell they're talking about reading or listening to it. I'm sorry. That sincerely.
That is one of the more frightening elements of...
It sounds elitist, but you just got to look at the people. You just have to look at them.
Well, yeah, but that is a frightening element of understanding the world is realizing that most people in charge of anything at any given time are not there because of merit.
No.
And... You know, whatever. So you know,
it's like the old phrase: the people who control things are not on the dais; they're in the audience, and not even necessarily in the audience. It's just an ambassador in the audience. I never go to these meetings. Oh, I shouldn't say. Anyhow, you know, you just it's what goes on behind the curtain. That's the truth.
Yeah, of course. To track back to this. So this insane thing happens where the Russians go in and they take the first chunk of Ukraine and Crimea, and then they people forget what happens next. What happens next in Ukraine is you have basically real militia movements stand up. The military does as best as they can. A lot Russians infiltrate a lot of stuff and whatever, but you know, Ukraine is the weakest it will ever be in this moment. The national government is crumbling. There's general discontent with all governmental structures. The Ukrainian military is still in a very Soviet mind and is shrunk quite a bit because they are their own independent state now, and they don't really have the resources because they're still rebuilding after being relinquished and given their own sovereignty. But even then, the Russians, they only get so far, and they can't get any further into Ukraine. And so it's very funny because even in this very sad state of affairs with, you know, the Ukrainian state and the government and organization and all of these things, the Russians still are terrible at being able to fight a conflict. And, you know, so you have to put that into perspective. But then what happens, so this is 2014. What happens that year, and it gets horribly worse the next year? Do you remember?
No, I don't. Actually, I don't.
The mass migration of people from Africa into Europe.
Oh, for crying out loud, I never made that connection.
Where?
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, that's exact. We were talking about that before. I wouldn't have gotten that out.
So this is the time period.
That didn't happen by chance. No freaking
no,
way.
No, so this is the time period where, you know, Libya falls apart and several key pieces in the, let's call it the trail of migration, an opportunity opens up. And you had, I think, like a million something people from Africa, mainly North Africa, but whatever, migrate their way across into Europe, primarily on boats and various things.
Yeah, and as Donald Trump would say, they're not sending their best.
No, but what's more important is who is doing it. Because right. This wasn't totally organic. This, I mean, some of it was just, you know, opportunities present themselves. People don't want to be in a place that doesn't have power and resources and whatever. Or is rife with political or violent instability, but the thing that that happened behind the scenes that there's actual articles about. You can go and find them. Is the number of Russian intelligence and naval officers who were arrested? I think there's like 20 of them or something sitting in Italian prisons currently from this time period, who were piloting or captaining or whatever the proper phrase is.
They're just ferry captains.
Ships to move people from Africa to Europe.
Oh, so
and
so
that's
let's,
just there.
Yeah.
But remember the mass migration across the Mediterranean. There, it wasn't just Italy. It was France, Spain, Greece. Like the whole European Mediterranean coast got inundated with these people, and active Russian officers and people were involved in it. And got arrested on espionage and various things and. And then the Russians just act like, you know, this didn't happen. These people were just on vacation and they were just doing humanitarian goods or activities, which is very dumb.
But one of the things we should always remember and never forget is Cyprus. Cyprus is basically half controlled by the Russians and not the Greeks. And that was a landing point.
Well, it's Turks and Greeks.
Right.
Yeah. It's technically these days it's Turks and independent Cyprus. And you can't. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing, but the Russians have a heavy, heavy, heavy influence on one of those sectors, and I'd have to sit back and go back.
It's honestly both sides. They play both sides of it, but there's I think it's the Turkish side they have a lot of influence on.
Yeah.
And it just has to do with like it's a gray area as far as like legal jurisdiction, and
but going back in time, if you look at the articles, the Greeks were like, okay, we're about ready to go to war.
Yes.
Over this, and
yes.
They were, yeah, it was, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, all this meme-based thing, you know, you got Getz
in
AOC, they scream about things, but we have this going on our southern border.
Oh, so I'm kind of walking towards the thing here. Remember, this is a time period of ISIS gets inflamed out of control. I mean, ISIS, like, consolidates.
Right.
And now it starts to get out of control. You know, people look at it and say, oh, the evil, you know. I literally read something the other day with regard to the terror attack in Russia where somebody on a forum someplace or made a comment someplace about, oh, this is just like the, how did they phrase it, the CIA-backed rebels fighting the FBI-backed rebels. And I was like, okay, so these people are just on, like, turbo idiot juice today. Oh yeah, the FBI is running militias.
Those are the Alex Jones listeners.
Oh, so there's people out there who they think about these things and they immediately go to, oh, it's a CIA thing. It's like everything is way more complicated than you realize. Like, yes, the State Department and the CIA and stuff were supporting various groups in Syria, no question about it. But why were they doing it? Because there were worse ones. We supported this was legitimately, I mean, I remember John McCain like arguing with people about this. We are supporting quote unquote moderate rebels. Why? Because the Assad government is trash and they are of no benefit to us to keep existing. At the same time, they're going to lose to a bunch of radical lunatics, and we want to support groups that will basically take on those radical lunatic groups and hopefully are less bad, right? The least of two evils. And in the end, our moderate rebels lost because the bad guys were way worse than anybody thought. Likely also had a lot of foreign support from various people who took advantage of an opportunity by doing the, you know, enemy of my enemy is my friend routine. And then that bites their hand eventually as well. So anyway, point is ISIS consolidated. Like, they had charismatic leadership and they were able to say, hey, look, there's like, you know, if you're looking at like, I can't remember what the peak year was, 2014-15, they say, I think 1400 groups, various militia groups in Syria at the time. And a lot of these are just like a village who's mad. But the fact that they were able to consolidate all of these people into one structure that spanned straddled a region that was basically the better part of two countries is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's about taking advantage of opportunities, and that's what these people did. But anyway, so the point is remember that with all this instability came a ton of migration. And this is a role that Turkey plays. And I remember back in the day, people complaining, oh, you know, this is Erdogan blackmailing the EU and whatever. It's like, well, the reality is there's still like a million refugees in Turkey that the Turkish government basically prevents coming into Europe.
Somebody's got to pay for it.
Exactly. So the EU has given them money over time to basically, you know, turn it from a open air tent camp and turn it into basically something that looks a little bit more like civilization, so these people will stay there, or eventually the idea is that they'll go back home.
They're never going home.
So that's quite interesting, because this is also happening at the same time frame, because people forget. And this
is a thing that we've talked about on numerous occasions, and when I sit down with clients and prospective clients on a one-to-one basis, 80% get it.
Yeah.
20% are just, they're out of their mind. You know, they're not clients of ours, but they don't get it. They just, yeah. Oh, that doesn't exist. Yeah, it does. Yeah. The 3, 4, 5 dimensional chess game is real. I people are like, oh, well, it's not that complicated. Yeah, it is.
Oh,
and sometimes it's as obvious as a nose in your face. So you have face-to-face armed combat, but then there's other things you do. You know, it's winning the heart and mind. And that's the thing that I think is really critical. It's not just social media that's being infiltrated. You know, it's not just tiki-taki-tok-tok. It's all of it. It's what I started off with, putting a picture of the Russian up. It's crafting the narrative from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, people think that Berlin Wall fell, therefore Soviet Union is no longer an entity. That is called, there's no longer an entity that called the Soviet Union anymore.
Right. So Obama chastising Mitt Romney. And
exactly.
You know, if you don't know what we're talking about, go to YouTube and look at Obama and Mitt Romney sitting down at a debate. It was actually very, I liked the style. That. Yeah. It was actually the last of the, I would call it, legitimate discussions. I don't like the word debate, discussion. And Romney talks about, they ask, you know, what is the greatest threat to the U.S.? And he says Russia. And Obama, in his sarcastic rolling of the shoulders and just like, you are such a moron, it, you know, the Cold War is over, Mitt, you know, blah blah blah. Nope, not one bit. That was just a reset.
Yep.
As we've talked about before, you know, strategic bankruptcy.
Yes. And that's one of those things that it gives you a lot of insight into the Obama administration and their lack of perspective on what was going on at the time,
sadly.
You know, they did some things right, but they did a lot of things that just made things worse, or they just didn't know what they were doing.
Or the hot mic when he talked to
Medvedev, yeah.
Yeah, you know, after the election, and we can do some real business and blah, 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 like, moron.
And that was one thing, is like, the fact that you even talked to Medvedev at all, I mean, the guy is, these days, you can find him on Twitter. Remember, he's still the He still has some role inside the Russian government. You'll see him on Twitter, and about once a month he gets raging drunk and goes crazy and threatens to nuke or do something to somebody. He is a mentally ill basket case.
So he's a Putin's Yeltsin.
Basically, yeah.
Yeltsin, Boris Yeltsin. That's the reference. Look that up if you want.
So anyway, yeah, so when you look at the migration situation, that's the scary thing. And because obviously, like, it just creates so many problems. So yeah, you look at this time period, there was an orchestration of movement of people. There was taking advantage of various conflicts and things, or creation of some in my mind. And they enabled this. Well, so now you skip to today, what's going on? You have this huge effort to do whatever to destabilize all these various African countries, to create a situation where these countries become unstable and they create a new refugee crisis coming from I think largely sub-Saharan Africa is the goal this time. It's not Northern Africa. It's places like Nigeria. And, well, not maybe not Nigeria, but Niger had a coup, and we have a military base there, and it's a huge linchpin. How the Biden administration handles that situation is going to very much determine whether Europe has a million sub-Saharan Africans of various country and ethnic origin.
But you're going to get people like Marjorie Taylor Greene scream and holler, we have no business doing that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, she'll probably claim that this was orchestrated by the CIA or something.
Well, or Hunter, who is going to profit from it. Yeah. And the problem is, you know,
as she tries to show more pictures of his private parts on the congressional.
Then you'll get AOC, and she'll run over there and she'll, you know, people behind cages,
yes,
and it's staged.
Yes.
You know, it's just...
Yeah, that insane.
I just wish everybody on the far right and left would just take a nice slow boat to Pluto. No, I don't want them to go to Pluto. They need to go to Uranus. That's where they belong, Uranus.
Yeah, it's
I'm going to start using that more and more.
So, you know, you look at what the purpose of Wagner is. You know, it's economic exploitation in the same vein as what China does in Africa. But it's also political. And their entire purpose, I think, right now is building this. They're the pure panic in the Russian state when they realized that they were a week or 2 weeks into the Ukraine conflict, and they were never going to be able to achieve their goals using traditional means.
Yeah, basically, an instant stand-up army of patriots, and that's a good word. Ukrainian patriots said, we're not taking this anymore.
Yeah.
And it's no different than the Revolutionary War here in the United States. I mean, George Washington was eventually commander. We won it because of guerrilla tactics. Here's another thing, guerrilla tactics. We never talk about Green Mountain Boys anymore. You never talk about the Vermont Volunteers and how, you know, the Redcoats, you're not fighting fair. Yeah, and we're not fighting fair. And I've seen that where it's like, I can't believe the Ukrainians are dropping drones and grenades. And you're like, really?
Well, anybody who says that is just ignorant because they don't realize that it goes both ways.
The Russian indiscriminate bombing of civilian.
But just drones, like you say, it's not fair. It's like the Russians have been doing it from almost day one, too.
Yeah.
It's just the Ukrainians figured out how to do it more effectively, engage the populace. People actually care about their country, so they give intelligence to people to do things with, where the Russians, outside of certain areas where they have good operatives, they don't have good intelligence. It's just a whole thing. But anyway, so you know, you look at the panic in the Russian government when they realize that basically we're incompetent and we'll never be able to achieve our goals. You fast forward to now, and they have put together a full spectrum application of active measures, not just against all of Europe, but also the United States. So they are in the process, and this includes China as well. Like you know, people may not, they may, you may think that this is an insane observation, but we are under full spectrum active measures from both China and Russia.
Yes, we are,
and that covers everything. So they're destabilizing Africa to create a refugee crisis to distract and cause problems and sow chaos in Europe. They are, in China, they are actively, they're using other things that they're even better at. So TikTok is a great example. TikTok is awash in crazy propaganda every day, all the time. And what's interesting is seeing your far left and far right members of Congress and other talking heads, they think that banning TikTok is now terrible and it's anti-American and
follow
it's
anti-free
speech and whatever. Meanwhile, exactly, you can just follow the money. It's actually mainstream now. It's not just a thing that, like, if you look at the donor reports, you'll find out about. It's like, yes, Rand Paul's largest benefactor is also now Donald Trump's largest benefactor, and he owns a substantial portion of TikTok.
Well, let's go back and reset the stage for just a quick second. TikTok, in any company that originates in China, is a Chinese government company.
Yeah.
That's the baseline.
Yeah, 51% owned by some structure of the Chinese government or whatever. That's how it works.
Okay, that's number one.
Yep.
So you then put certain people in key positions who can facilitate the development, and we have a gentleman who got some shares of stock.
Yeah, he was I think he was like one of the market makers or something. Yep. When they made their push into the West.
Okay, so follow the logic, ladies and gentlemen.
Because remember, you have TikTok, which is what the Western version of this, of the application, but then there's Douyin, which is the Chinese version of it.
Right.
You will never be able to access Douyin. You can only access it in China. It's segregated and separate for a reason, because Douyin operates completely differently from the way TikTok does. TikTok is a propaganda organization to push certain narratives and sow dissent, basically, in the West.
Right.
But then Douyin is, people have made this comment over the years, and it's tremendous. Douyin promotes the things that you would expect. It's, you know, pro-family. They remove things that are viewed as anti-government or anti-social. The trends they push are largely things that are, I don't know, just they're much less toxic is a way to describe.
Well, where I wanted to go with this is I wanted to emphasize to our four listeners, I want you to emphasize that. So I have TikTok. It is a Chinese government owned entity, 51%. 51% is the key. 51. Mm-hmm. Now they can own 99%. Doesn't make a difference. They have the majority. You have a limited number of people here in the U.S. who are given access to stock ownership. And this company now winds up becoming an American depository receipt. It's traded on the stock exchange. Now, I'm not saying TikTok. I'm just saying these kinds of, all of a sudden, it's worth a lot of money, right? Well, now, this person is an American. They are worth a lot of money. And so, in order to maintain your power and prestige, and maybe we have had a conversation, meaning the Chinese, with them, you know, you can be bumped off very easy, so now you're stuck. I mean, you went in bed with the devil, you live with the devil. Yep. Now, I want you to support this candidate and that candidate, and that is how you have influence peddling in American elections, and nobody does anything about it because, well, you know, it's one step, two step removed, but what do we focus on? Now, don't get me wrong. They focus on Hunter Biden.
Oh yeah,
it's a total distraction from following not just one layer of money. And this is where you, being an investigator, being a forecaster, being able to do this kind of research. When I talk to people like this, I know what happens. Sometimes they go, "This can't be real." It is real. Yeah. It's money laundering to the highest level.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things with regard to this. Like it's constantly going on. I mean, I have tons of things that I could mention. You know, the FBI and various other entities, investigative entities, have, you know, been shutting down, you know, Amazon sellers and various like companies all over the United States who, you know, oh, I'm an Amazon seller, and it's basically just a money laundering operation to get political donations into certain candidates. And it turns out, it's a U.S. entity that is owned by, you know, a Chinese national, and it's just a way of laundering, you know, Chinese currency into the U.S. to be used for political donations, right? I remember there was one I heard about fairly recently, and you know they had like an entire floor rented out someplace in Miami or something, and it was empty.
Yep.
Like very, very basic stuff. Like the influence peddling operations are huge, and they're not just here. I mean, the stuff I read about that's going on in Europe is just as big and sophisticated. So,
well, it's just like
and largely it affects the, as you would expect, the people who are outside of the mainstream. So it's the people that are typically more far right in Europe. These characters. A completely unrelated thing. I remember listening to a podcast or something. They were talking about, they were playing clips from some Chinese intelligence officer, I think, that were like captured phone calls or voicemails or something. And he was referring to various, we'll peddle this influence with this person just in the same manner that we did with somebody else. And the other person they were talking about, I don't remember the names, but it was like, oh, you look them up, it's like, oh, there's some other in a country that's nearby, they're another one of these quote unquote, you know, if you look at the regular media, far right extremist politicians. But what do you find? Oh, they're being influenced. They're a sought after target by Chinese intelligence because they're rabble rousers and they'll work with people that are less traditional, right? So anyway, it goes across its full spectrum, and the same thing is going on with the southern border. Like, this is one.
Before we go to the southern border, can I do one thing? I want to jump in. I want to talk a little bit about the bridge, because we did that recently. Okay. And one of the things, so if you're listening, do me a favor, get out your crayon, your pencil, or your pen, and write this down. The Bridge Podcast. The Bridge Podcast. It's on YouTube, and it's at, use the at sign, at The Bridge Podcast 5463. 5463. So let me give it to you again. The Bridge Podcast at 5463. It's on YouTube. Okay. Now, as of the other day, it had 246 videos. They pump things out like crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you look at this, just so you know, YouTube is supposed to disclose, Amazon is supposed to disclose the source of the material, okay? Now, they claim they don't put anything in here about China, but
if it's state-owned media of any kind, they're supposed to put a label on the channel that it is state-owned media.
It's not. They're not doing it, because if you go to The Bridge by way of CGTN, well then,
which is literally Chinese state media.
That's what I was getting to. So the YouTube version looks all American, and it's all about China's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And we're going to do a whole podcast on this. That's a cast of characters, okay?
Yeah.
We could do 12 hours on these clowns.
If you know the main players that China uses for American and Western European pro-China propaganda, they're all on this podcast. It's one of these things, like, you try to, it's state propaganda. That's all it is.
So if you go to,
but the idea behind the name is that it's a bridge between the East and the West. Yes, and we're all the same.
Yes,
and
we're all pink inside,
but we're friends.
Yeah. So China Global Television Network, CGTN, sounds like CNN, right? Is one of three branches of state-run China Media Group, okay? And the international division, let me get rid of this here for a second, is headquartered in Beijing. It broadcasts news media in multiple languages, and it's the central, check this out, central propaganda department of the Chinese Communist Party.
Yes.
Holy crap. Now, if I was involved in a political group, these are the things I would be screaming about, going, you go to YouTube, you talk about tiki-taki-tok-tok, we're going to talk now about the southern border. Why isn't Rand Paul? Why isn't Donald Trump? Why isn't Joe Biden? Why isn't everybody on the left and the right, the Dem and the, why aren't they just losing their minds over this? Follow the money. I'm sorry. It just gets to the point where you may be Democrat and you're so frustrated with things. You're frustrated with Kennedy not being able to have a legit primary. I mean, he wasn't allowed. Neither was Bernie Sanders. You might be, you know, a Haley supporter, and I didn't really have a real chance to run against Donald Trump. I don't care. All that is meaningless. This is what concerns me, because this is the heart and soul and defense of the country.
Yeah. And the best part is the political situation has devolved to the point that nobody's talking about these issues anymore.
No.
Instead, we talk about absolutely meaningless stuff.
We're the size of Hunter Biden's genitalia.
Yep. Marjorie Taylor Greene is very impressed with that. Anyway, so you look at the southern border, and the same thing that they've done in Africa, North and Sub-Saharan Africa with regard to migration, that's the same thing is happening in Central and South America. And the fact that there is no discussion about this is actually pretty insane. I mean, it's famous in my mind anyway, a clip of some intelligence officer just fairly recently, I mean, within the past couple of years, in some congressional hearing, and somebody asked about, you know, Russian intelligence and presence and various things. And he said that, well, the largest, again, this is before the full-scale Ukraine conflict, but the largest presence of Russian intelligence is I think he said Mexico. It's like, oh, well, Shazam, that really, you don't say.
Nobody will publicly come out and talk about that.
But you can find articles from, you know, the past 10 to 12 years that you've got, everybody was hot and bothered over a Russian, you know, intelligence base that they put in some Central American country or this place or that place. Obviously, they still have a presence in Cuba, and they still have a huge influence in Venezuela. So it goes on and on, but the general point is, I mean, we can talk about the specifics, but it's a joint venture. It's Russia and China. They work together when it's convenient. I think these days Russia is more of a subject of China, especially when it comes to their economy. So it's wild. Like, the whole situation is absolutely insane because it's very clear what's going on. They're creating a problem that not only sows dissent and chaos and division in the country, but they're also creating a problem that if you're more, let's call it out there as far as who's working for and what strategies are at play, it creates an opportunity, it creates a problem that you can create a solution for.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody wonders, well, why don't they just do X, Y, or Z? It's like, well, you can think this logic chain down, and one can assume that everybody's incompetent all the time, and our leaders are just bad, and whatever. Or you can assume that there's more mischievous intentions behind these decisions as well. So, anyway, there's a lot more here. I mean, we could do multiple episodes about Mexico and fentanyl and cartels, and there's just tons of stuff there that doesn't get into the mainstream because, one, it's scary, and two, it's people have interest in these things.
So for our regular three listeners here on the Paul Truesdell podcast, we have mowers, edgers, and blowers coming, and so the crew is getting ready to do maintenance around the place, and we're going to cut it off here, but I think I'm going to do a little bit more of these with you here. When we are out and about running around, we're not in the studio. The studio has great quality. That's the greatest thing in the world. So if you don't mind, every once in a while, bear with us, because these are the kind of things I want to get out. I just think it's just important. Do you ever get frustrated? I mean, you know how frustrated sometimes I get with this thing. I mean, do you ever just want to just scream?
No, because it's outside of my control. Like, if I can't control it, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But it's important to know, you know, especially with what we do. I mean, these things have a huge effect on companies, their decisions, investments, where mm-hmm. things go, the ups and downs of various trends and things. Like, it's very important. And you kind of have to look through the cheesecloth that they put over everything, because there is something there. But no, I mean, in general, this is something I think everybody has to not get so worked up and bothered by certain things that are outside of their control. You know,
don't get worked up. Just spread the word. Continue to spread the word.
It's perfectly fine to discuss these things and consider them. But if it's outside of your control, it's not something you should get too worked up about. You know, the things you should get worked up about and actually do something on is, you know, the stuff you can control.
Yep.
And that's going to be more local than anything else.
So, you
know, shouting at the TV about what Joe Biden or Donald Trump said today is extremely dumb, but yeah. That, you know, you can go to your county commission, city council, and have more influence, you know, putting your opinion on something, a development project or something like that, that actually has real tangible effects on your community. So,
well, one of the things I wanted to talk about, we're not going to do it. I want to talk about Apple. I want to talk about the antitrust. I want to talk about how people do not realize why that's going on. We can talk all about just a whole bunch of different things, but we'll save those. I'm Paul Truesdell, the elder.
And I'm Paul the younger.
And we're going to get out of here. Hope you enjoyed it. Tell your family, friends, neighbors, relatives, and coworkers. We're out of here. Bye.
You have been listening to the Paul Truesdell podcast. For additional items, serious to humorous, wisdom to occasional outrage, of various degrees, visit paultruesdell.com. That's paultruesdell.com.
Paul Grant Truesdell.
Roger that, dust off in five. On the floor, now!
The Paul Truesdell Podcast was sponsored by Truesdell Wealth, Inc., a true fiduciary-based registered investment advisor headquartered in Ocala, Florida, the heart of Florida. If you have $1 million or more of investable assets, be advised that Truesdell Wealth is the home of fixed-cost investing. Call or text 212-433-2525 and leave a detailed message. This concludes this episode.